You are Locked On Pirates, your daily podcast on the Pittsburgh Pirates, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Locked On Pirates, the daily Pittsburgh Pirates podcast of choice. My name is Jason Rolston, and in addition to this podcast, you can find me on the pages of, well, LockedOnPirates.com and PiratesBreakdown.com. And we are here today with Alex Stumpf, one of our, I would say, very well-established cohort at Locked On Pirates now, but him and Jared do the Clear the Deck podcast, and you can also find him at a number of places. How are you doing today, Alex?
Pretty good, yeah. And Jared and I ventured into Facebook Live this last week, and it wasn't a total backfire.
No, it's pretty good, actually, and we hope to do more of that in the future, so everybody got to put a face to the name, and if they're still listening, thank you for sticking with us after that. Wouldn't blame you if you ran away.
Come on. Right, I booed that day.
Enough ball busting. So, there was a tweet of yours that caught my eye today, Alex, And that's why I wanted to get you on the podcast just so we can, you know, generally commiserate about the Pittsburgh Pirates. And your tweet reads as follows. I don't know how good this Pirates team is yet, but I do know they are pretty damn fun to watch. Now, it's about a month into the season, a month and change, a month and a week or so, a month and 2 weeks, whatever. Do we really not know if the Pirates are good yet?
I really don't. I mean, they were outplayed by the Chicago White Sox today for 8 innings. And I know that's one game, very small sample size. Lopez was throwing BBs, all that good stuff. But they were pretty outplayed. And yesterday, Ivan Nova got lit up. And Trevor Williams got lit up today. And Chicago doesn't exactly have that great an offense. Now, you could just say, although it's two off days.
Right.
Back-to-back, and, you know, the offense was able to bail them out. I still don't know exactly how good this team is. I still feel they're hovering around that 500 mark. Maybe if you put a gun to my head, I'd say 82 wins rather than 80. Because at the beginning of the year, I said 81, and that caused many uproar. People didn't like that. Mm-hmm. They wanted me to just flat out say winning season or losing season, which I couldn't do. I don't know exactly how good this team is still, but that was a fun game to watch.
It absolutely was. And if you didn't see it, obviously Colin Moran and Elias Diaz did the legwork in the top of the ninth inning to come back from 5-2 down to win 6-5. Vasquez nailed down the save. And I believe this puts the Pirates at 20-16. Going 21-16, I'm sorry, going into tomorrow. So they're right there in the thick of things in the NL Central after 37 games. And I'm still kind of with you, though. It's kind of – and here's why I'm with you, because we haven't seen Taillon pitch with much consistency. We thought he'd be much better than he was – or than he is. Ivan Nova seems to have some very bad wrinkles in his game right now. Trevor Williams, the luster is starting to come off of him. Chad Cole, you never know what you're going to get from start to start. So going into the season, I thought that this team would compete on the basis of its pitching. I was absolutely wrong. And, of course, the offense is doing what it's doing. Just a couple quick notes on that. If you go by wins above average, which is one of the derivatives of war, the Baseball Reference kind of highlights quite a bit, the Pirates are getting the most WAA wins above average from the catching position in all of baseball. The most WAA in left field in all of baseball. And, of course, we're talking about Francisco Cervelli, Elias Diaz, and Corey Dickerson. And I wanted to talk about him specifically because you had a great piece on I think that was it on Locked On or was it on the Point of Pittsburgh?
That was on Locked On.
Oh, okay. So you kind of talked about how he closed a hole in his swing, or the biggest hole in his swing. And then we saw Fangraphs, I believe it was Travis Sawchuk, follow up on that.
It was Jeff Sullivan.
Jeff Sullivan.
You're going to get one of these eventually.
I am, but I'm glad I have a good fact checker here. Anyway, the point I want, and the roundabout point I'm making here is I wanted to talk to you about this. Right now, he's seeing the third most fastballs on the team. I happen to believe that if opposing pitchers start to pitch to him a little bit differently, he may not be able to sustain this over a full season. And I want to get your thoughts on that.
Well, I'm actually going to disagree here because he's a bad ball hitter, yes, so he probably does like getting that occasional slider way down in the dirt that nobody should ever swing at. And, oh, wait, that's a double down the line for him. For those who didn't read the piece, The biggest hole in his swing was last year he led all of baseball in whiffs against four-seamers. And this year he's whiffing like one-third of the time against the pitch. It's a significant difference. Part of that is he's a little more disciplined at the plate. A large part of that is choking up on the bat. Talking to Jared Prugar yesterday, we caught the last couple innings of Tuesday night's game after we went to the curve, or after the curve game, and he was bringing up where his hands are. He's moved his hands up a little bit. It's not always on the shoulder. I didn't even notice it until Jared did. Brought it up. It's a bunch of things to shorten up the swing, make him go through the zone faster, and yeah, maybe it compromises a little bit of power, but he still has good extra base power, so maybe they'll throw him a few fewer fastballs down the stretch, but I'm liking what I'm seeing right now. I don't know. He's rolling with the batted ball and play gods, but it's hard not to be very optimistic about him right now.
Yeah, if I look at Dickerson's performance against what StatCast labels as off-speed, which is everything, slider, changeup, curveball, knuckle curve, and all the funky junk. Ephus, yeah, I'm sure he's faced a couple of those, yeah, right? But anyway, so it's not like he's horrible against off-speed pitches. Last year, for example, he had a 3.316 xWOBA, expected weighted on base average.
It's not too bad.
No, I mean, it's respectable when you think about, you know, the function of working these off-speed pitches to get back to a fastball count and see a fastball. And if we just look at how many barrels he had according to StatCast last year on off-speed pitches, he had 8 out of 2,513 total off-speed pitches. So it's not like he makes fantastic contact. Exit velocity is only 87.2 on off-speed. But I think it's respectable enough that he can be a little slump-proof, like you said. And if that happens, then the Pirates have to be even more thrilled with the what I happen to think is already the best trade of the offseason, with apologies to the Garrett Cole trade for Houston.
Yeah, I don't know what Tampa Bay was thinking there.
Yeah, I don't know either.
You could argue that it's C.J. Crone for Corey Dickerson. Okay, maybe that's a lateral move. Crone's a little cheaper, and I think they get him for an extra year of control. But they didn't have to give up Corey Dickerson. That's what's kind of being lost in translation. Yeah.
And
that's just me.
Yeah, you're right. And Crone is having a decent season. OPS 776, 7 home runs. But nothing like Dickerson would have been putting up, presumably, for Tampa Bay.
No. And you were bringing up Pirates project or their value in left field behind the plate. Out of curiosity, I went to Fangraphs, their team leaderboards. For position players, we're going to get rid of the pitchers out there, so it becomes wide open. Mm-hmm. Where do the Pirates rank in WRC+?
National League or baseball-wide?
All of baseball.
Okay.
No pitchers. That's how it can be all baseball.
That's a good point. So I'm going to say definitely top 8. I'm going to take a stab and say 3rd.
You're close. 2nd.
Oh.
At 112. And that was before Wednesday's game, which 3 home runs, it'll probably, at the very least, stay at that 112 mm-hmm. range. The only team that's ahead of them are the Braves.
The surprise Atlanta Braves.
Who I'm starting to get in on the hype train.
So just to button up on this, if we just look at the Pirates' performance over the past 7 days, since last week, spoke to you guys. Dickerson has put up a 196 WRC+ in the past week. But Marte had a 180. Cervelli continues to rake at 151. Josh Bell, I would say a not flash at all, 162. So, and even Gregory Polanco is starting to come around as well. So to answer the question we said at the top, are the Pirates good? I really think you could definitively say offensively yes. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, the offense is good. I mean, sure, Dickerson won't be able to hang on to this crazy streak. At some point, he's going to go to mere mortal levels. If he ends up at like 140-ish, that'd be a fantastic season. He's at, what, 150-something right now?
Something like that, yeah. And I agree, that's just an amazing season, you know, out of the blue. Yeah. And you're pretty close. He's at 147 right now.
He's at 147 right now, so okay. Mm-hmm. That's good enough. So I think the offense, if they can stay healthy, can be this good. I mean, Francisco Cervelli made some changes at the plate. He's no longer crouched over. He's straightened up his back. He's generating power, not only homers, but extra bases, doubles. I think he has a couple triples already. He was kind of a wild card. Him and Polanco were the wild cards for this offense. And Polanco did have that real long slump, but, you know, he was hitting the ball hard throughout it. So it's like, okay, well, he was whiffing a lot also. But whenever he was making contact, it was good contact, which is what you want to see. It's hard to say, you know, a 375-foot flyout is a bad at bat.
Right, right.
So offense as a whole, yes, I will say is good. And I'll agree, whenever I came into this season, I thought if this team was going to compete, it was going to be because of the young pitching, and, you know, the offense was just going to be good enough. And here they are, five games over 500 at roughly almost the one quarter way of the mark of the season. And it's just been the pitching that's just been good enough in the offense that's carrying them. Speaking of Polanco, you just had something about him on Locked On, didn't you?
I actually was on PiratesBreakdown.com. So
it was on Pirates Breakdown. All right.
So we have
now I'm getting fact checked.
Yep. So we've swapped bad references there. But yeah, I wrote about him recently because he's starting to come out of his funk. He had that great start to the season. Everybody kind of got on the hype train a little bit. Then he took a downturn. But I think the key to him getting out of it, staying out of it, is going to be jumping on fastballs early. So I grabbed a whole lot of numbers together, and basically out of the 249 total pitches that Polanco had seen in the zone, and this was as of 2 days ago, 71.4% are fastballs. So he's getting fastballs in the zone when pitchers do come into the zone on him. Why then is Polanco's overall zone contact rate just 28.1%? That kind of doesn't add up. And we cut the numbers a little more. The vast majority of those pitches that are in the zone are four-seamers, 63.5%. Only 12.9% are cutters and sliders, and you have 23.6% with two-seamers. So, you know, there's not too much moving stuff. And I know you had a piece on the Point of Pittsburgh. Did I get that one right?
Yeah, okay. That one was right.
All right.
I'm going to let you finish because I've got my 2 cents on that.
Okay, good. So you talked about a hole in his swing, which we're going to talk about. But what I also looked at was that, yes, these fastballs have a pretty even distribution, except for that hole in the swing, which is middle in, these long had. So if we just kind of take that out, because we know that's an existing hole in his swing, there's really a good chance that the fastballs are kind of evenly distributed. So if he can just be a little more aggressive, I think he will have a lot better results. So I'm just going to say these are only four-seam fastballs that are in the zone on 0-0, 1-0, and 0-1 counts. In those three counts, he's seen 54 four-seam fastballs this year. And he's only swung at 25 of them, and he's only made contact 10 times. So that's 46.2 swing rate, 18.5 contact rate. Now, that doesn't sound so bad, especially when if we look at that same data, 0-1, 1-0, and 0-1, 0-0, 1-0, and 0-1. And look at MLB ride as a whole on four-seamers in the zone. The contact rate is just 19.7, but the swing rate is 53.4. So there's the disconnect. Polanco is being, you know, as crazy as this might sound, he might be a little too selective on four-seam fastballs early in the counts. And I think if he can just bridge that gap in contact rate, or at least in swing rate, you know, maybe he'll make more contact. And he's been tagging them when he sees them, but he's just been a little too selective at the beginning of the count in fastball counts. So that's kind of where I'm at with Polanco. You can look at that piece at PiratesBreakdown.com. Alex, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I took it a different way. If you look at Polanco's swing last year compared to this year, especially whenever he's setting up waiting for the pitch, he's raised his hands, which kind of goes against the grain of so many of these power hitters who lower their hands whenever they make swing changes. And, yeah, he has been able to reach out to the outside part of the plate better, which, again, there's that big hole on the inside part. But he's also making worse contact down low than he has in previous seasons. And I'm wondering if setting up higher is the reason why he can't get down low as fast.
Okay. So, you know, if we put it all together, Still very much a work in progress.
We've got some pieces here. Let's assemble them.
Yeah. Maybe that'll have to be saved for another podcast. But the bigger point that's being made here is that the guy is still just 26 years old. This is his fourth full season in the major leagues, fifth that he's spent at least some time in the majors in. Been knocked around with injuries. So it's no surprise that these kind of things are still happening, these adjustments, these holes, these periods where he's not selective or he is selective or too selective, not aggressive enough. So it's going to be – not to say it'll get worse before it gets better, but I really think you can expect to see a little more of Polanco and just this inconsistent kind of approach to the game. So one guy –
it's not been that bad a season overall, I think, is what we should really stretch. Like, okay, yeah, batting average is, what, 225, but 114 WRC plus with only a 242 batted ball in play, which will hopefully go up a little bit too. That's not too bad.
No.
That'll play.
Yeah, I think it will. So we're not going to spend too much more time here. We wanted to just kind of touch base with you guys and talk about this recent stretch of games. But I want to talk about Trevor Williams because, look, the guy is a fantastic citizen, a fantastic part of this team. You can't fault him on for his social media presence, of course. But has the luster kind of left Williams already? I mean, he was definitely the most consistent starting pitcher of the lot over the past month. But two straight starts now, he's been rather shaky, including two home runs today. So what's your take right now on where you see Williams' performance?
Well, there's two ways to look at it. One of them is here's a guy who had an xFIP around 5 coming into the game. So, yeah, his ERA was half of that. xFIP isn't always going to translate over, especially since he doesn't get a ton of strikeouts, and he's been walking more batters this year than he has in years past. But you look at that and you see, okay, he's walking on eggshells. On the other hand, throughout all of April, he pitched in cold weather the entire time, and this is a guy who grew up in San Diego, then pitched in college in Arizona State, and whenever he played minor league baseball, it was exclusively in Florida because he was in the Marlins system. I think the coldest environment he pitched was in Indianapolis, which during the summer months doesn't get that cold either. Even the spring isn't usually that bad. So he hasn't been able to get all three of his pitches working in a game. Like post-game conferences, he'll say, like, I didn't have my changeup today, or I didn't have my slider today. So wasn't there in Chicago, obviously, for this latest one, and I haven't heard his presser this time around, but I'd be very surprised if this was the start that he had all three of his pitches. So if he does get that feel back, and he had that feel pretty much after 1 month of starting last year, after being in the bullpen coming back as a starter, he got that feel back about then, and from then on, he was great. So if he could get that feel back for all three pitches, then I have absolutely no worries about him. Here's a guy who could at least duplicate what he did last year with the low 4 ERA, give you 6 quality innings every time. I think this long stretch of home games is going to suit him well because here's a guy who I think it's something ridiculous. Like 14 out of his last 15 home starts, he's gone 6 innings and allowed 2 runs or less.
Yeah, and for me, what I worry about with Williams is just exactly what you said. I mean, he's not an overpowering guy by any means. His K per nine this year is just 5.71. Never been a high strikeout pitcher, but previous to this year has been, up in the sevens. But my worry about this, and I will say this, my worry with many field pitchers in today's baseball, is if the feel leaves you and you're not some overpowering high strikeout pitcher like a Gerrit Cole, for example, I think when it's bad, it's going to be very bad, if that makes any sense. He doesn't have that powerful stuff that you can just rely on and go back to if his other stuff isn't working. Like you said, all of his stuff has to work at the same time to some degree for him to be successful. And I wrote recently about how he's been using the changeup probably the most on the staff. That pitch has gotten hit around quite a bit the past two starts. So again, like you said, I think you get the nail on the head. It's the feel that's gone, at least right now, at least, at the same time, all of his pitches aren't really playing that well. And that, if you don't have the stuff to rely on, that could bite you pretty hard. So I think there's a good place to stop. It's an exciting time in Pirates baseball, like we said at the top. You know, maybe by this time next week we'll know if they're good. What do you think, Alex?
Probably not. Memorial Day is my day.
Okay.
Last year, the 10 teams that would have had a playoff spot if the season ended on Memorial Day last year, none of them made the playoffs. So that's my, okay, this is a good team. You stretch.
I'm writing that down. Alex had a great nugget on May 9th. Check back on Memorial Day. Okay, I've got it noted.
All right.
All right. So
that's not the first time I've said that, but.
All right, we're going to let you guys go for tonight. Please, if you like our podcast, we encourage you to subscribe. We're on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, anywhere you get your shows. Tell a friend, and if you can, leave a review. Those three things help us out the most, and we hope to keep providing you with great content. So for Alex Stumpf, this is Jason Rollison saying good night.